Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Now, today's show is a musical monster, as writer Laura Snapes joins me in the studio to tell us about the new albums by the British singer Nadine Shah and those titans of American indie, The National. We'll also have Latin American music picks later on in the show, and we'll also, of course, be getting this week's Global Countdown from Fernando Augusto Pacheco. And giving us a much-needed break from all that singing and dancing is the writer and curator Francesca Gavin, who'll be telling us the hot art tickets this month. That is all ahead on the Monocle Arts Review here on Monocle 24. Laura and Francesca, welcome to the programme.
Hello.
Also nice to be making new friends. I know you both, but across the artistic and musical divide.
I like crossing
Is it
culture.
A divide?
Crossing the streams.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, they're crossing the streams. Laura straight in with a Ghostbusters reference. I'll be ticking them off my list as we go through the programme. Laura, we're gonna start with you. Busy summer for a festival going, album reviewing, music critics such as yourself. Before we jump into Nadine Shah, what was the last great place you were at to see a gig or to see a festival?
I saw a very good gig in Glamorous Dalston on Wednesday by a man called Chris Forsyth, who is, I believe, still on tour in the UK. He's playing the Sea Change Festival in Totnes this weekend. He's got a small band. He plays guitar like it's like a cosmic television. There's not a lot of singing. Occasionally he sings, but it's very kind of cosmic and gnarly and searching. And that was very good.
Really beautiful, right? A cosmic television.
I know.
Like
I want to watch
angular. I like that. Yeah. Okay. That's good, isn't it?
I want to know what a cosmic television looks like. I'd buy one.
Television the Marquee the Moon band. Television. Yeah.
like Marquee Moon with gold dust.
Okay. Fair enough.
See, I told you this is all about learning.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's all right. Okay, we're going to. Should we roll up our sleeves and get into Nadine Shah?
Sure.
Shall we play a clip so our listeners know of whom we're speaking? Fatalities in the water, traffic jam by your side. Feed your son, feed your daughter. How are you going to sleep tonight? The bad guys, they are winning. Now I'm worrying for our health. Damn your men, damn your women, damn the children, damn yourself. That is Nadine Shah with a cut from a new album called Holiday Destination, the follow-up to Fast Food from 2015, which everyone loved. She's a very well critically regarded artist, Nadine Shah.
Yeah, absolutely. This new album, I think, is a huge leap from the last one. The whole thing has that very tense, prickly, kind of staticky atmosphere that song has. And she is a British, Norwegian, Pakistani artist from Newcastle. I mean, just from that song that you heard there, I really love the way that she sings in her accent. I don't think I've ever heard such a beautiful, like, women's Newcastle accent in song. No. But it's a very political album. It's about her assessing her place in Britain, you know, post-Brexit. There's a song on there about how people like to say to her, go back to where you came from. And she's like, well, Newcastle.
Right. In quite a broad accent, possibly, as well. Yeah.
And it addresses, the refugee crisis and what it is to be a British-Pakistani woman in 2017. And I just think it's staggeringly good.
Now, these are all things that are kind of nice to have on a checklist of things. I mean, she's always been quite a political artist, right? But how does that work with the music? Because there was a bit, I was reminded a bit there of PJ Harvey, especially her last couple of albums, which are obviously more political than much of her other stuff. How does the music fit the atmosphere or the content, the lyrical content of the record?
I think there's something very uneasy about the way that it sounds. I first listened to the album on a loop for 4 hours while I was stuck in an airport, and I don't really know why I did that because it didn't do a lot for
and
my
you still
mood
like it, I was going to say, okay.
But yeah, it has that very uneasy feeling to it. It feels like the rug could be pulled out from under your feet at any time. She maintains that kind of enjoyably monotonous way of singing, so it feels oppressive, but there's also really good dynamics within the way that it sounds. Like, it's a very grayscale album, but it's still very exciting for it, I think.
Grayscale.
When I listen to it, there's no colours in it. To me, it's all black and white.
Okay, yeah, the monochrome set.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it is something like that, right?
Pleasures, yeah.
And there's something sort of matte about it rather than glossy. There is something minor key about it, right? It's that sort of thing. So how does that suit? So you listen to it, you did what we don't have to. Laura, listening to it for 4 hours nonstop while you were stuck in a queue in an airport, how does it reward the long listen then? Are you really getting hit over the head by the music and the message here?
I don't think you're getting hit over the head by the message explicitly. If you want to just enjoy it as a piece of oppressive music, you could. It really sustains a mood throughout the whole thing. But if you want to dig deeper into it, I think it goes into race and society and into mental health as well, which has always been something she's talked about a lot. Yeah, you can enjoy it on a number of levels.
Because she's been in the past, and maybe this fast food record, there were a couple of tracks on that which were, singles, which were single worthy and all the rest of it. Is this something that is best as an album, or can we... I mean, that the cut we heard just there sounded, as I say, it sounded like it was a bit of a runaway thing in the style of Polly Harvey. Mm-hmm. Are there singles to be gleaned from this record?
Yeah, there definitely are. And as much as I've said that it kind of sustains the mood, she's really good at writing very dynamic, hooky songs. Yeah. Like, towards the end of the one that we just heard, there's a big saxophone kind of freak out. So there's lots of furniture within every single one, but it does work really well. It's like if you're in a terrible mood in an airport and you just need something to maintain that steady vision.
A specific reference that hopefully our listeners won't have to endure. They can get some friends around, sit in their front room and pretend to be in a queue at Gatwick South Terminal.
That sounds like a good way to start hating the album very quickly. But I would recommend it in all.
No, Nadine Shah's better than that. Exactly. Well, that's good stuff. It's nice to hear Nadine Shah. I mean, I was not surprised to hear that you might like Nadine Shah. The National we go to next.
Nobody's surprised to know I like that.
No, indeed. Now, these are a fans band. And as Holly, I think, has written into our notes here, if you love The National, you damn well love The National, right?
I would say that's true. I saw them for the 30th time this summer.
Whoa!
I think I've already seen them 3 times this year.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Did you see the Ragnar Kjartansson thing that he's obviously a big fan of theirs, isn't he?
Yeah, the Icelandic artist. Yeah. He got them to play their song Sorrow for 6 hours straight. I didn't see them do it because they did it in New York, though it was shown on a loop in the Barbican, which sadly I missed. But I did review the box set of it, which is 6 hours of them playing the same song over and over again, and I felt insane by the end of it.
Wow.
But it was quite a fun meditative and writing exercise.
The endurance, Laura Snapes, the endurance listener, can write a memoir about this.
There were parts where I was laying on the floor, in the final hour of it, just thinking, when is this going to be over? When is something different going to happen?
Yeah. And I guess that was the point of them, right? That was why why they did it. Anyway, right, so they've got a new record out. Should we take a clip of this, just in case anyone is unfamiliar with what they sound like?
We're in a different kind of thing now. All night you're talking.
And the album that's new from The National is called Sleep Well, Beast, and it's out next month. Laura, is this classic National?
I would say it definitely is classic National. This is their 7th album, and I would say for the kind of 5th and 6th records, they started getting a bit slower and a bit more elegant, and you could think, you're kind of heading into middle age, maybe this is where the band is going to go. But there are songs on this record, that one included, that rediscover the vitality and the aggression and the bravado of the songs on their best albums, which I'd say Alligator, which is the 3rd one, and Boxer, the 4th one. That's one of them, but there's a song called The Day I Die, which I would say reaches the heights of Mr. November, which is probably their best known song. And there's a song on it called Turtleneck, which is an unadulterated guitar freak out, just like nothing I've never heard from them before. So much so that when I listened the first time, I had to actually check that it wasn't playing the wrong thing. There are still really beautiful, elegant moments on it, but I think it's them rediscovering their energy and their dynamic as a band. And I interviewed them and they said it's the first time they've written in a room together in 10 years, and you can really hear it.
And you can hear that.
Yeah.
And for a fan and for someone that I guess has reviewed all of their records as well, do you kind of feel that they've kind of gone full circle? Is that a nice feeling as a fan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There are parts of the record that are self-referential, which I think is really satisfying when you've been a fan of something for so long. On Alligator, Matt Berninger, the frontman, sings about himself in this really puffed up kind of mocking way, and that's disappeared. His lyrics have been quite bleak ever since then, but it's come back on this record, and it feels like, it feels like looking at an old yearbook or something and remembering the people that you used to know.
Yeah, right. The jock has returned.
A bit, yeah, but it's still very kind of self-lacerating, but it's funny.
So there's a bit of sort of Father John Misty territory in there, and more ways than one, right? There's sort of, is he playing the rock star or is he a rock star?
Don't say those three words next to my favourite band.
Sorry, Francesca, you're going to have to intervene here.
I
There's going to be a fight.
Mr. Misty was quite a nice bloke from his friend of a friend. She always said he was very sweet.
Yeah.
That's my only input.
All right, I'm going to split you two up. If you're not careful. and the experimentalism. What I wonder, as a critic of a band, what happens when they get into a bit of sort of stately territory? They get, as you said, they sort of get a bit older. They mm-hmm. made some money. They have a nicer tour bus and better dressing rooms. When you kind of like them, when they're a bit more raw, what happens? Can you go on that journey as you age yourself? Or do you think, hang on, guys, where did it all go?
I've really enjoyed the two albums that have just gone by, but there was part of me that was like, oh, I just wish that you would reach the... Because when they play those songs live, they're much more aggressive than they are on record. And all I've ever wanted, you know, over the 10 years that I've been a fan, is for them to seize how violent they are live and put that in a record, because I think that's where they're most exciting. I think they're very aware that they can push into stately territory, but with this album, they were much more destructive about it. So they jammed more and they let their friends collaborate on it a lot more. Last October, Aaron and Bryce, who are the guitarists in the band, with Bon Iver, they put on a festival in Berlin at the Funkhaus. It didn't have a name, but they spent
a
week...
That's a beautiful building, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible, yeah. They spent... an old East German radio complex. Mm. And they spent a week inviting... There were loads of other artists there, and everybody was there to spend a week making new music. But Aaron and Bryce took along the new national record, and they just gave it out to people, and they were like, do whatever you want on it, just give us the recordings. And then a lot of that ended up back in the record, and you can hear kind of the destructive, kind of explosive parts of it a lot more.
They went Berlin.
They did.
In many ways. Francesca knows what that's like.
I mean, I spent a year going Berlin. Actually, arguably 7 years going Berlin.
Yeah, come on.
And it's worth every bit of it.
It is indeed.
Well, I've just come from Berlin where I saw Wolfgang Tillmans do his first live performance as a musician. So that was it. Berlin's definitely a place where they're into breaking through boundaries in whatever medium
they're
using.
Where it's expected as well, right?
Yeah.
You've got to be kind of quite a boundary breaker to break one there, I think, right?
Yeah, but everyone's open to experimentation. So it would make sense to me that a band that's feeling a bit like wanting to reinvigorate, let's say, go to Berlin.
Yeah, do it. Tick. So it's called Sleep Well Beast. It's out next month. It's a new LP from The National. It is recommended none more highly than by Laura Snapes, perhaps. By the way, the song that we heard, that is one of a single, one of three, which is out now, which is called The System Only Dreams in Total Darkness, which could be the name of a really good painting. Which brings me on. Thank you, Laura, very much.
So subtle.
For your picks.
Such a smooth lead over.
That's what they say. Such a smooth lean over. Such a smooth keel over. So just to recap, Sleep Well Beast will be out on September the 8th on 4 AD. And now we're turning our attention to the art world. Mm-hmm. Seamlessly, Francesca, almost. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we're talking about Julia Stoschek, the Julia Stoschek collection.
Yay! I cannot say
it.
How much... Okay, when I went to this, I heard about this exhibition, and no one's really been talking about it. Because Edda Atkins, a British artist who's based in Berlin, curated it, and it's based from Julia Stoschek, who's the best-known video collector in Europe. She basically has the lot... She's been putting together her collection for 10 years. She has an incredible space in Düsseldorf, which is a really...
Which is rare as well, right?
And it's a kind of funny city. I mean, Kraftwerk came from there, and it's kind of a city that sort of... affluent, but not necessarily the centre. I mean, the German art scene's quite split up. And I went to this exhibition without much expectation of what it was around, except for the fact that Edda Atkins had curated it. And hands down, I think it might be the best video show I've ever seen in my entire life. I spent 2 hours there. I could have probably spent 6 hours there. It was exceptional. I cannot tell people to go to Düsseldorf enough.
Who got shares in Düsseldorf? I thought we were going to Berlin.
Get on the train, head down there. It was exceptional. And it's part of the reason is the way that he approached the collection. So this is 10 years of video work. Instead of everyone likes showing things in different ways, he had an egalitarian brief of everything was shown the same dimensions and projection. And in between these pairings of videos, there were these glassed walls with soundproof doors. So you would always get the sound clash and video and image clash between two different films. Let's say Charles Atlas's amazing 1980s film, Hail the New Puritan, starring Michael Clarke, and a Wolfgang Tillmans video. And then you open the door and you can see there are other layers behind it. And then you close it. And then you're in another combination of let's say, Douglas Gordon and Dara Birnbaum, and it's amazing. Sometimes there are works I've never seen before. Even if you know the work, the combinations are incredible because they're also always changing. You could see, because some film is like 60 minutes, others are 4 minutes. So there's like four films on one side, one on the other. Even when you're standing in front of two, you can see through to other things beyond it. It turned all the films into this amazing kind of reinterpretive collage. It was brilliant.
Is this, I mean, is it with Julia Stoschek's collection? Mm. I mean, is this a sort of great, is Generation Lost, by the way, the name of the show, which I failed to flag up
yes,
at the beginning of this section of the programme, is that a sort of greatest hits collection of the Stoschek collection? Well, or is this a more kind of finely tuned curated?
Well, it's piece? Really interesting. The loss in this has multiple meanings, and Ed Atkins has done a very, very interesting catalogue to go with it. The loss is referring partly to the changes between medium as you're moving from video to DVD to digital, and how you actually have a loss of texture and information. Mm. So there's a very big essay from a conservator who's very connected to the collection in terms of how they maintain the works. But the loss is also in a much more poetic, metaphorical sense. And there definitely is a sense of a kind of generational look. A lot of this from very young artists in the show, John Raffman, Rachel Rose, Ed Atkins himself, like people at the beginning of their careers.
You don't have that context of the history, the graininess, the Super 8 vibe much video art
had. Those works are there. But it's more like the loss also feels more like, I don't know, this kind of sense of loss. It's very much kind of a generational sense of human loss within it. And there's some really interesting works that are quite political, and you really feel like that is quite a strong base underneath it. Some of the things are just amazing visually. There's like early Bruce Nauman films in there, early Paul McCarthy films in there. So it's not just contemporary work. It's one of the best homages to the medium I think you could possibly see. And everyone was really into the 180 The Strand show that was on last year.
I was going to say, The Infinite Mix, right? Yeah. Loved that. Yeah.
Everyone loved that, which Ralph Rugoff
and the Kjartan Son. There was a lot of video in the Kjartan Son, which
but I'm going to say this show in Dusseldorf blows them all out of the water.
Okay.
It is exceptional. It's truly fascinating.
And Stoschek herself is an interesting collector, because she went out on quite a limb, I think, when she started collecting video art, and to amass such a lot of it. I mean, it's not a niche within contemporary art at all.
Yeah,
but I suppose she's still viewed like that.
Well, it's still seen as quite a difficult medium to collect, specifically in an art world that seems, or at least an art market that's so bent on speculation and value, and everyone heads for paintings as the most obvious thing if you want to be making blank million further down the line. But actually, I think when it comes to innovation in terms of the medium, I think video and arguably installation are really the most interesting places for innovation and the best artworks that have been coming out of the past decade. And I think she really proves, I think she's a real champion for her medium. She's done amazing solo shows with different artists there, and the collection is it's truly stupendous. But I think I think Ed Atkins, because he's an artist who works with the medium, is used to playing with multiple screens. I think he came with an incredibly brilliant, simple, and incredibly effective idea in terms of display. Really works.
Yeah, your enthusiasm is palpable.
I mean, I've been to Venice, I've been to Manifesta, Documenta, excuse me. I went to Munster. Out of all these big things this year, this was the thing that I went, oh my God, can I stay for another 4 hours?
Stupendous, says Francesca Gavin. It's good stuff, right? I like it when people come in and just love the stuff they're talking about.
I'm just super
keen. Makes it very easy. Generation Loss is on at the Stoschek, at the Julia Stoschek Collection, until the 10th of July 2018.
Only on weekends.
Only on weekends. Okay. I like the way you said that, as if it was like doing a bit of hairdressing on the... Only on weekends, though, because yes. I've got the day job.
Don't go Money Friday when you're booking your Dusseldorf.
Money Friday.
Yeah.
Go to Dusseldorf, says Francesca Gavin, for the first time possibly since anyone wanted a heart transplant in the 80s.
Very large Japanese community in Dusseldorf.
Is there?
Lots of very good Japanese restaurants.
Okay, nice. I don't think we've got time to get into that. Next up, Big Objects, Not Always Silent.
Mm.
A well-titled show. This is at the Philadelphia ICA. Talk us through this, apart from the wonderful title. Sort of broken English.
This is basically a solo show devoted to an artist called Nathalie Dupasquier. And
you love saying that, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I love a bit of French. I like showing off that I can actually say something in a semi-French accent.
You've just ordered three coffees, by the way.
Exactly. And Nathalie Dupasquier basically is best known for being one of the artists that was part of Memphis. So the 1980s design collective. We all know what that aesthetic is. It's big, it's bright, it's bold, it's very colourful. It was kitsch that's become
and
in.
I've had my script printed in sort of Memphis colours.
Well, right? You know, in a bit more neon version.
Yeah, a bit more neon.
With a stripe and a wiggle, maybe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nathalie, and this is basically a solo show of her work. It's kind of a retrospective, but it's also showing her more recent work, which she's best known for doing painting in the decades since she was working with Memphis. And then there's installation pieces. But I think it's really fascinating because it's highlighting how that period of what was once seen as kitsch and kind of a bit trashy, and also very much within the world of design, is now crossing over into something that's being considered art. And I think that's quite a boundary-breaking, defining moment.
Within her discipline, how does the design and the art rub against each other in her practice?
Well, it's really, when she makes the paintings, they look like sculptural, architectural blobs. They could be her tables, they could be her wallpaper, they could be the fabric works. There's a real, like, overlap. But I think it's very architectural. It feels like building blocks of wood, even. Mm. It's almost childlike in a lot of what she does. So I don't think there's a lot of difference in terms of her aesthetic approach. It's kind of like Play-Doh modernism that kind of seems to cross
They'll
over.
They'll keep that one for
things.
The poster. Nice, yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's quite fascinating in terms of how it works. So it's almost like there's a playfulness in the design which kind of makes it veer towards art. There's an architectural design nature in the paintings that makes it kind of cross over. So it very much sits in this middle ground. But I think it's just, I think people are now not looking at design as just in its niche.
No, but it's one of those things because you kind of, I kind of like to think of design as being something that is has a use, right? And then art is the ephemeral nature. You might be able to make both of those things, but they're made for a different reason. Or am I wrong?
Well, I don't know. I think that's what's changing. Yeah. You're seeing so many Ettore Sottas shows that are of like ceramics and of glassware and like functional objects, but they're totally being placed in a straight up, not even questionable fine art context. So I think people are
now.
Is this
a market thing or is this a curatorial thing, though?
I think it's a curatorial thing. I think the fans are there. I think the fans are beginning to see these things as art objects rather and as sculptural objects.
Because this isn't like walking around Freeze Masters and them subtly putting in something that you could actually put some art on.
Yes.
And it happens to also be quite a nice piece in itself.
Well,
right?
Or the Pavilion of Art and Design, my favourite.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Wonderful kind of art design crossover. Wouldn't this look lovely in your apartment in the 8th arrondissement kind of vibe? There is a touch of that.
You can say Nathalie Dupasquier to your heart's desire there.
But obviously she's been working as a painter largely, very much in the past decade. So it's obviously she sees herself more as an artist. So it's curated. I mean, the Philadelphia ICA are brilliant, but it's also co-curated by Luca Lepinto, who's originally from Rome, who did Nero magazine, who's based in Vienna at the Kunsthalle Wien, putting like the ICA are doing really cool collaborations in Philadelphia. So they made this together. And yeah, it's someone kind of looking at an art thing and going, oh, wait a minute, you were also part of Memphis. And everyone's weirdly super into Memphis.
I know.
It reminds me of like the set of Beetlejuice, you know, that kind of crazy, weird.
I was unsurprised to see a couple of bits in David Bowie's collection, in fact.
Yeah.
Of course, he was going to have some.
Of that moment.
Yeah, totally, you know? Of that moment. I love that stuff. I wonder, just finally, on Nathalie Dupasquier, when you can do both, when you can be an artist and a designer, and now we regard them unsniffable. Were they regarded as it was a slightly sniffly back in the day when this stuff was being made? This is just a weird wardrobe. Why you make a cupboard that looks like that? And now you, the market or curators or both say this is actually art, and we're going to reframe it in some way. Are they having to rail against former sniffiness? I wonder.
Well, I think it's a generational thing. I mean, in art schools, there's probably still a little bit of a differentiation of boundaries, but I think everyone's very into like breaking out of whatever's seen as an accepted model. And I mean, definitely when this work was being made, I mean, that there was design was functional, it was object, it was dry, it was in no way had the loftiness of the high art world. And I think, I definitely think that's changed. And I think this show is just another exhibition that really highlights that difference. It's something that could have been in a design museum, but it really it's different and it's presented differently, I think, because it's in a fine art space. It's kind of more installation led. It's a little bit funner. It's a different kind of showing. It's a less sort of like, this is how this was made.
Yeah.
This is how this was used. It's more like, let's look at the aesthetics and the ideas around what's going on in this.
Well said. That is Natalie Dupesquier. The show is called Big Objects, Not Always Silent. It's at the Philadelphia ICA in the state of Pennsylvania. As we've been told, I think more as a correction than anything else. And that show is on. That's running actually from September the 13th until December the 23rd this year. Thank you very much. Now, though, thank you very, very much indeed. I'll do a proper thank you at the end, but I didn't want to go to the next thing thinking, with our listeners thinking that I wasn't being thankful.
Just be thankful.
For what's gone before. Now, if Laura's music picks weren't enough, we've got plenty more music coming up in the show. Before this week's Global Countdown, we're going to hear from our friends at Cascabel Studio for some Latin American tunes. Diego Jalfin tells us what he's been listening to this summer from Chile, Argentina and Brazil. Luisa Borges, Brazilian, she has her second record called Certezas Inacreditáveis after Romanceiro in 2012.
So tell us a bit about Luisa then. Is she a big deal in Brazil? I don't really know her over here in the UK. Has she travelled much?
No, she's quite new. I mean, she's been singing and writing. She's also a poetry writer. Last year, she has written Silencio Absoluto, book of poems. And she's quite new, but very, very respectful. The media, the big media, mainstream media, is now paying attention to her work.
Okay, well, should we hear a bit of her music then? What's the name of this song we're going to listen to?
Today, we're going to listen to her beautiful voice on A Fama e o Fome. Você tem fome de quê? Você tem fome? A pobre fome pôde perceber que o métier era roubada.
Well, that was Luisa Borges from Brazil. Now we're going to talk about Mariana Paraguay. Tell us a bit about her.
Mariana, she made this great, great album recorded in Mexico City and Buenos Aires. She's from Mendoza, Argentina. And the time that Mariana did this new release, La Flecha, which is The Arrow, an album with rhythmic force of strong, faster and different songs from her previous works. She used to sing in English a lot, and now she has all this album made in Spanish.
And how did you find out about Mariana? Is she quite a big deal in Argentina?
She's very independent, but she has a name already.
And what record label is she working on? Are they a big label over there?
No, it's an independent record label, Concepto Cero, and has her as an artist, and has very interesting artists, Concepto Cero, I have to say. Different from what you expect from Latin America. They bring new sounds, some mixed sounds as well, between roots, sounds, and contemporary way of interpreting.
Well, should we hear a bit of Mariana's song? What's this single called?
This single is called Verni y El Faro.
So that was Mariana Paraguay, and she's from Mendoza. What's the music scene like in Mendoza?
Mendoza has a very exciting new scene, I have to say, with a lot of new artists. Of course, they are trying to build something different because Mendoza is very far away from Buenos Aires, which is the more progressive, maybe more European, mixed culture city. But Mendoza is a, they had a great population. I would say Mendoza, Rosario, Buenos Aires, La Plata are the four main cities that bring new sounds.
Are you always looking to those places when you're traveling around Latin America, trying to find things to bring back to London?
Yes, and Mendoza also has a connection, strong connection with Chile. So many of Chilean artists go there to perform. Many of artists from Mendoza go to Chile to perform.
Well, speaking of Chile, let's go to our third artist, who are called, well, it's spelled M-K-R-N-I, but I've been told sometimes that's macaroni, or there's another pronunciation as well that you had.
Yeah, McCurney.
McCurney, however you want to say it. Tell us about these guys.
Yeah, they are really, really fun. You can laugh a lot with their songs and sets. Macaroni on the dance floor, we would call them. Electro and synth pop band from Chile, and that always delivers fun songs, as I was saying, and sets that invite to dance and laugh. And their style takes us to a cute pop atmosphere inside on an 80s mood.
Okay, well, I'm intrigued. Should we hear a bit?
Yes.
What's this song called?
This song is called Marimba. This song in particular is a bit different because, added to their usual guitars and synths, it includes the marimba instrument as one of the main sounds that, of course, makes you dance. And the album is called Hiperrealidad, or Hyperreality.
And is this quite a typical sound to come out of Chile? Are they really into their 80s synth?
Yeah, they have a very nice electronic scene since mid-90s going on. And they like 80s a lot. And this band in particular, McCurney or Macaroni, are one of their main characters in that independent scene.
And we are coming to the end of the summer now. What's been your top track of the summer this year?
Wow. I've been dancing a lot, but I don't know if the tunes I'd pick are they new or classics?
It could be a classic song.
It could be a classic song, then. I would sing a Charly García song, Los Dinosaurios.
Los amigos del barrio pueden desaparecer. Los cantores del radio pueden desaparecer. Los que están en los diarios.
Fernando Augusto Pacheco is in the studio. Welcome.
Hello, Rob. Hello, everyone.
Thank you so much for coming in, Faye. Where are we going this week?
We're going to Australia, and I've been meaning to go to Australia for a while, but then I have to be honest, there's not so many Australian artists at the moment, and there still isn't, but there's a very interesting story for the number one song this week in Australia, so that's why I picked Australia. Shall we start? Shall we do a little countdown?
Let's do a little countdown. Where are we starting? Number five.
Number five, okay. For me, it's quite an average song by Calvin Harris featuring Pharrell Williams, Katy Perry, and Big Sean. The song's called Feels.
I mean, I quite like this. I like how they've done her voice.
I love it.
Yeah.
I do like the video, though. I do think, you know, it's very colorful. There's some macaws there as well. So just to a little bit summary. But number four, that's an interesting one because it's Imagine Dragons with Imagine. You know, as we know, the charts have been dominated by, you know, hip-hop, EDM. There's not many rock tracks in the top 10, so it's almost a little bit of a rarity to have a band like Imagine Dragons. So yeah, it's quite an interesting story there. Number three, we still have Despacito. It's been 16 weeks at number one in Australia, but Finally it's giving space to someone else. I think it's about time.
So just to get it's the full artist's name. It's Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee featuring Justin Bieber with Despacito.
Yeah, and I love talking about in this program, like, Australia is one of the countries that is the version with Justin Bieber that's on the charts because, you know, I last week I did France, they have the non-Justin Bieber version. So there's a little bit of a division there.
Australia are believers?
They are believers. They are, indeed.
Nice.
Controversy okay. there.
I like that. There's a bit of maybe French, sort of French singing quota to that. Right?
Exactly.
Take out the Bieber and it's fine. What's number two?
Number two is a lovely one. And I have to say, I just listened for the first time this week, is the American rapper Macklemore and Skylar Grey with the song Glorious. I don't know... you know, the song is very nice, but the video clip is wonderful. Basically, he does a surprise for his grandma called Helen. She's 100 years old. So it's quite a sweet... I almost cried watching the video.
Oh my God.
And apparently it was a surprise. You know, he had a camera...
So it's him with his phone or something videoing it.
Yeah. Okay. And then he tells his grandma, Grandma, let's do whatever you want. And then they go shopping. And I thought it was like fake, but actually it's true. You know, it was his real grandma.
Good old Macklemore.
Yeah.
Okay.
But shall we hear a clip of the number one song?
Let's have it. Okay, Faye, take it away.
That was Pink, What About Us, her new single. What do you guys think of Pink or perhaps this track?
Well, I'm glad Pink exists in a way. She's quite, you know, she's a representative of a girl with a big mouth. That's always a nice thing. I find the music deeply boring, but that's me. There, sorry.
No, it's good.
It's not exactly grime. I'm a bit more of like that kind of, there's not enough bass line in it for me.
Yeah, all the personality of Pink's early stuff has completely disappeared. I would not... in a million guesses, have guessed who that was.
No, I wouldn't have thought Pink.
Certainly she got this kind of the EDM beats that everybody's using. Mm-hmm. It become a little bit generic. But the reason why I picked up the song, it's because Pink is massive in Australia. I mean, when I say that, it's incredible. I think now she has 9 number ones in the country. She's just behind Kylie Madonna with 10 number ones.
Wow.
So basically, another single she would tie in with Kylie Madonna.
She's going to get... that's a way to get a passport, isn't it? Come on.
And Pink said in interviews that Australia is her second home. So every time she tours, I think her last tour, she was in Melbourne. She played 18 times in the same venue.
Whoa.
And it was all sold out. So, and there's a special pop-up shop that Pink did in Australia. So they have some sort of relationship. And yeah, I don't know how. I think she just likes Australia.
I think I like her. I like her. But I know exactly what you mean, Laura. I want a bit more, you want a bit more fire in the belly.
You know which song I like by Pink? I like Feel Good Time. I think it was the soundtrack of Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Nice.
And it was not a number one song.
Okay. That's for the connoisseur then.
Yeah. Okay. It's a B-side.
A little bit, yeah. That's on the full unreleased Decca recordings. Yeah, I'm with you. I like the Calvin Harris though. I kind of love that. I don't know what they've done to Katy Perry's voice on that.
Oh, that little hook is so perfect.
It's such a lovely, such a perfect hook, yeah.
I love when they combine so many collaborators that you just go, let's add plus, 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 and see what we turn out with.
It's like a baton race.
Yeah, exactly.
Songs.
Calvin Harris plus Pharrell plus Katy Perry. You're just like, well, you definitely wanted a number one then, yeah?
And Big Sean as well.
Big Sean's
sorry, excuse me.
That's why they've only got space on the line in the Billboard charts for the one title, which is Field. It was probably going to be something really sort of exotic and long. But anyway, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed, of course, also to my guests, Laura Snapes and Francesca Gavin, for giving us your far more than two pennyworth on music and contemporary art. This show was produced by Holly Fisher and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and I've been Robert Bound. And to play us out, let's hear a bit more of that number one track from Pink. This is What About Us.
Up at the stars, we are billions of beautiful hearts, and you sold us down the river too far. What about us? What about all the times you said you had the answer? Thank you.
want to be sold. We are children that need to be loved. We were willing, we came when you called. But man, you fooled.
What about us? What about us? What about us?